Hello and welcome again to Sport Unlocked, the podcast unpacking the week's sports news. And we start by celebrating a big Platinum Jubilee. So much celebrations, festivities planned across England as the Queen marks 70 years on the throne. But there's a more significant one. 70 episodes of Sport Unlocked. You've been putting up with myself, Rob Harris, Tariq Panja for the New York Times, and Martin Ziegler from the Times. Tariq and myself are here in Paris. Martin, you're back in England, so not able to join the celebrations, unfortunately.
Well, you know, we can celebrate from, I'll raise a glass to you from afar, guys. It was good to meet up this week at the Sport Law Conference in London, where we shared lunch together. And yeah, hope you're having a great time out in Paris, and lots to talk about this week.
Martin, actually, you are in the heart of the Jubilee. What is it like being in Britain? Just flags a go-go, right?
Yeah, certainly in London there weren't there on Oxford Street. There was it was quite something to behold.
And of course, Martin, the reason we saw you at the Sports Law Conference is because you were talking up there on stage alongside others, including Tracy Crouch, former sports minister, as well as Nick DiMarco, who's known for the role at Newcastle United in terms of helping Mike Ashley legally and sell the club, and Amanda Staveley and the Saudi consortium gain control.
Yeah, it was good to speak with him, and Nicola Palios from Tranmere Rovers. Really interesting talk about football governance.
Well, and we start the episode though here in Paris, where it's been a huge week with the news that Kylian Mbappe will be staying here on his new 3-year contract, having rejected a move to Real Madrid. Not just a contract story, but an issue that has infuriated the Spanish league, with La Liga president Javier Tebas firing off furious complaints and taking legal action or threatening it against PSG over the fact they can finance this deal.
Yeah, this prompted a sort of remarkable outburst from Javier Tebas. His trademark is outbursts, but I think this was more remarkable than most. And he called it an insult to football and scandalous that Mbappe had chosen to stay at PSG. I mean, part of me thinks this is La Liga thinking that they were going to get the sort of brightest young star in world football, and being sort of left empty-handed, because actually, if you look at the players in La Liga now, important for them to have people, exciting people, to sell TV rights, and they don't really have that many at the moment.
No, I think there's loads of interesting things off this. First, the numbers. The signing on fee is said to be around 130 million euros, which would be one of the biggest transfer fees in history, but almost all of that is going to Mbappe himself. So that for me is like a sea change when players run their contracts down and the signing on fee. Secondly, he signed, that's before his wages, which are enormous. Real Madrid were going to make him the best paid player in their history, which would have been around 25 million euros net for year, and the numbers are eye-watering. And then he decided to stay at PSG, so you can only imagine what the gas-fueled Paris Saint-Germain team will be paying him, Ziggs. And then you have this fight, and there was a response as well, Martin, wasn't there, from the League One chief executive or president, Vincent Lebrun. And while we've been in Paris, a lot of people are saying, well, did he actually write that? Or was it PSG? What did you think, I mean, of that defence?
Well, it was interesting how the Ligue 1 were acting on behalf of PSG, standing up for their interests and having a go at the Spanish finances, the way that Barcelona and Real Madrid have been found guilty of illegal state aid, according to European authorities. But you've got Ligue 1 standing up for one of their clubs, the club that in many ways is completely distorting the competition and negating any title race most years. And you know, when they're talking about some of the spending that's going on, it's all PSG, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I suppose it's a similar thing in a way, in that the... And so that cat just scratched me. Can you... My cat just scratched me. Oh. Ow.
Scratching irritation of La Liga boss Javier Tebas a bit like that.
It's... we'll recovering from that assault. It's a bit of a similar situation for Ligue 1 in that, you know, PSG is their sort of their main club, and obviously they very, very keen for Mbappe to stay because, you know, he will help sell their own rights and et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, I know you, Rob. You know you reported on the letter from Vincent Lebrun to Tebas, and also I'm seeing there's one Lebrun actually wrote to Alexander Seferin, the UEFA president, in which he's threatening legal action against Tebas, saying that, you know, it's causing obvious damage to our championship. His repeated denigrating statements constitute acts of unfair competition by La Liga. And that the fact they're aimed at disrupting the relationship of trust with their economic partners. So it looks like it's getting to a quite a serious level now, actually.
Rob mentioned state aid in what he was saying earlier, and that's really interesting here as well, another dimension to the Mbappe transfer. The rules in Europe under the European Union did indeed punish Real Madrid and Barcelona for state aid from Spain. However, two of the biggest state projects are Paris Saint-Germain, Qatar, and Manchester City, the United Arab Emirates. And because they're not European Union countries, they can give as much aid as they like to these teams, as much pump as much money as they can without any triggering of European Union rules. That, some people say, is a little bit unfair. And maybe that's something for UEFA to rule on. It's the governing body after all. And perhaps it might want to look at how it operates state aid rules. It is the governing body of European football after all.
And sitting on the executive committee of UEFA is one Javier Tebas. And there's no indication at all that he used his position to try to influence the new financial sustainability regulations to include clauses on state aid relating to non-European entities, particularly sovereign wealth funds, which, of course, even if he was rejected, he could have made it very clear he made the proposal in some way to show that he's actually fighting this in terms of the regulatory space.
While European countries can't invest through state aid, as it were, there was a European president influencing this transfer. They can influence another way. Mbappe said he had multiple conversations with the French president Emmanuel Macron over staying at Paris Saint-Germain. I can't imagine state involvement in a football transfer like this. It just shows that for Macron, for France, Mbappe has become a state project. What do you think of that, Ziggs?
Yeah, I thought that was amazing as well. Yeah, can you imagine, you know, Boris Johnson phoning up Jack Grealish? You're absolutely right.
Jack Grealish had spent the week partying, which is something Boris Johnson would completely be opposed to. And Jack Grealish was actually drinking while at work at the trophy parade. Something, again, that would not go down well in Downing Street.
Absolutely not. No karaoke machines there, surely.
But there is the football connection to that, as we digress.
Helen McNamara, who is the league's chief policy and corporate affairs officer, was named this week in the Sue Gray report for a lockdown breach when she was a senior civil servant, saying that she brought a karaoke machine into an infamous Leaving Do in Whitehall during lockdown, for which she received a fixed penalty fine. Actually, it's the Premier League's annual summer meeting in next week near Harrogate. But I presume there will be no karaoke machines taken to that. They'll have to make their own entertainment.
That was quite a tangent, but you were making the point about political intervention.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I don't think we have seen the like, and we probably won't see the like again for many years. But just to go back to sort of state-owned clubs, I mean, the only issue I thought is if you ban them, then you'll have situations like Newcastle United, where allegedly, apparently, it's not state-owned. It's a sovereign wealth fund, and what you'll do, actually, the difference with PSG is that they don't sort of hide the Qatar links. It's the sort of, you know, they accept it's all owned by Qatar and it's Qatar money. But I think Manchester City and Newcastle United sort of insist that they're not state owned.
Here's something to ponder as well as we sit talking to you from Paris. The fact that had a meeting here turned out very differently in 2010, we might be preparing for a World Cup taking place in a few weeks. But there was the meeting with the then French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, then UEFA president, Michel Platini, and the then Emir of Qatar, and all sorts of investigations stemming from that and questions over, was that where Platini's vote was influenced to go for Qatar? And had it not, then we might have had the World Cup in the regular time starting in June of 2022, in a few weeks.
And also, Paris Saint-Germain might not be owned by Qatar. That meeting, as Rob's just alluded to, changed the face of football for the past decade. So we have a World Cup in November and December in Qatar, which will be the weirdest World Cup bar none, almost certainly. And we have this super club in Paris that has been gobbling up the world superstars in a way we've not seen before.
Yeah, Platini and Sepp Blatter are actually due to stand trial, aren't they, in Switzerland next month? And that going back to that infamous meeting in the Elysee Palace, Platini always insisted that Sarkozy never told him which way to vote, and he made his own judgment that he should vote for Qatar. But actually, Blatter himself, I mean, when I interviewed him in 2016, he said completely the opposite. He said that Platini phoned him after the meeting and said, look, my head of state has asked me to support France, and if he is, then I will do that. So he said, because of the interests of France. I was going to say that's been denied by Platini, but that's what Blatter said.
Political involvement. The reason we're actually here in Paris, of course, is because of the Champions League final, which is due to be staged in St. Petersburg. And UEFA took that decision in the final week of February as the war in Ukraine was being launched by Russia to take the Champions League final off Russia. And actually, and Emmanuel Macron was amongst those pressuring UEFA to deny Russia the prestige of having a Champions League final. Actually, even about the day before the war actually began, he helped to sort of get the big game here in the French capital between Liverpool and Real Madrid.
He did, and there was actually a secret meeting here in Paris. Schäferin flew in for a lightning visit to confirm this the day before Russia was officially stripped. That would be in Paris, and it's an enormous city and it can absorb it. The French Open's taking place at the same time, and you don't get the sense there is a Champions League final here because maybe of the size of the city. You know, the other funny thing is the Champions League final has moved so many times because of COVID. For example, Istanbul twice had the tournament moved, but the balls, for example, had Istanbul stamped on them when they were in Portugal the last two times. This time UEFA has got this war in Ukraine, and also the goodie bags for the VIPs have been left blank just in case they had to move, because poor old Istanbul has been stamped on all these products, but it's never had a final, and as it's supposed to. Hopefully, they'll hope they're going to have it next year.
Yeah, incredible. I think the decision to give it to Paris was a sort of thank you, wasn't it, for the French not joining in with the Super League. None of the French clubs joined in it a year ago, so that's a sort of little reward for them. Imagine it seems inconceivable that it could be in Russia. I mean, at the time, was it like big news and sort of this was a sort of big statement of intent? But obviously, it would be impossible to be in Russia from everything that's happened since then.
But there are Russians competing here in Paris at the moment. You can't see many signs for it. Occasionally spot them. But Roland Garros, the French Open, is underway as we record this. And of course, those Russians competing for ranking points. Unlike at Wimbledon, we're still dealing with the fallout from the ATP and WTA deciding Wimbledon won't count for ranking points.
They are having discussions with the other Grand Slam tournaments, and they are contemplating legal action against the ATP and the WTA to get them to restore those ranking points, I think is important. And we have had players like Naomi Osaka saying, oh, they may not come to Wimbledon because she can't sort of get herself worked up about something which is an exhibition match. So I think that's a sort of slightly pathetic view from my opinion.
But what's been interesting from the players, there is that solidarity. And again, we've talked about this for a few of these podcasts now about the individual punishment for Russian players. I think a lot of these guys are friends as well. And I think some of that becomes personal when your pal on the tour can't play in the tournament. And I think that's hurt a lot of tennis players. And I think the Russian athletes should be allowed to perform at Wimbledon. Martin, you think there's a greater good here by them not playing, correct?
I do, yeah. I just think it's, you know, look at those Ukrainian tennis players who are, you know, some of them are actually serving in the Ukrainian army, fighting for their country. So I just think it's unfortunate, but it's one of those things.
And that sight potentially of Russians winning at Wimbledon, which could get exploited as the PR boost for the Russian state. There will be a change, though, this year on the ladies' side of the tournament, because the winners' board is going to be changing, isn't it? You've discovered, finally, the removal of Misses.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's always been a sort of strange thing at Wimbledon that you'll have the honours board says the gentlemen singles, it'll have N. Djokovic. And then on the ladies singles honours board, it will be Miss A. Barty. Or if you were married, then you didn't even get your own sort of initials on it. For example, Chris Evert, in 1976, she was down as Miss C. Evert. And then she married John Lloyd in 1979. And the honours board said for her 1981 victory, Mrs. J. M. Lloyd. Which is a sort of strange anachronism. Anyway, Wimbledon say they're going to have equality. The honours boards are coming down. They're going to be replaced. They're just going to have the initials, and she will be C. Evert Lloyd on it. And she responded quite favourably on Twitter with some applause emojis. So good on you, Chrissy Evert.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to really have an issue with that, but we live in a time. I'm sure someone on social media or some broadcaster somewhere will have a problem with it. But clearly, this should have been done a long time ago. It makes complete sense, and the world can move on without much controversy, you'd hope.
There was one broadcaster who did.
Let me guess.
Predictably.
Yeah.
Piers Morgan. Is this the death of chivalry?
Well, moving back to the world of football, and finally, a resolution in that most drawn out of complex stories, the Chelsea ownership, as we record, Todd Boehly and his group closing in on completing the takeover from Roman Abramovich, with the completion of those regulatory matters and government approval, not only in Britain, but also Portugal and on the European end too. So Chelsea finally reaching a new era. How complicated do you think it was in the last sort of stages to get this over the line?
Well, not just the last stages. I think the whole way through, it's been incredibly complicated. You've got to get the agreements from the Jersey government, the Portuguese government, the British government. You've got Abramovich has got to agree that the loan that he wanted can't be repaid. Initially, he said it had to be repaid, and then they would then provide the money. So it's been incredibly complex, but it's, you know, we've finally seen. They've changed the company's name and company's house. They've put through new company resolutions. So, yeah, the process has started. All the green lights have been given, and it's a new era.
You're right. It's the weirdest deal in sports history, you know. And with that little twist with the requirement for the Portuguese to give their acquiescence to the deal, and that's just funny because Roman Abramovich last year managed to get a Portuguese passport, for which he got because he managed to claim that he could trace his roots to Sephardic Jews that were expelled from the Iberian Peninsula 400 years ago during the Inquisition. Now, the rabbi that assisted in that is under a criminal investigation in Portugal.
And one of the other parts of the deal, something you've pointed out as well on social media, is the number of people calling this takeover a £4.75 billion takeover. It's already the most expensive purchase price ever for a sports club, but it's been inflated in some quarters rather because of the misreading of a press release, because it's £2.5 billion the sale price and the need to commit £1.75 billion in spending in the team and the infrastructure.
Yeah, I think it's because people like big numbers. Go for the biggest one. But yeah, you're right, Rob. £2.5 billion, which is no short amount, is the purchase price. And that money is going to be frozen now, Ziggs. Ahead of what? Ahead of a charity for Ukraine? Can you explain that? Can anyone unpack this yet?
It's going to be a new organization, a new charity, a new foundation. Can't have Abramovich's name on it. There's a guy who used to work for UNICEF who's been lined up to run it. But the government is going to be very monitoring it very closely. So they're not just going to hand over, you know, this vast sums of money until they can be absolutely sure it's going to be used properly. Because, I mean, one thing for sure, the Charity Commission is going to be looking very closely at what's happening with the money.
Yeah, and the key thing is making sure Abramovich doesn't benefit in any way financially from the foundation. But as we've mentioned so often, it can be about benefiting through prestige as well. That would be a benefit for Abramovich potentially in the future. Because I think as we reflect on this, and the war's now 3 months old as well, and no end in sight after Abramovich himself was apparently involved in those peacemaking efforts that we've not heard much from again in recent weeks. But at some point, sport might bring Russia back into the fold without a clear resolution in Russia. I mean, we start to look ahead to what happens with Euros qualifyings and things like that for the men's Euros. Russia at the moment will be out. That starts in September. So then we're looking ahead to future events there, barred from. So the focus will be on how Russia, if it is brought back into the fold in the next few years without a clear resolution.
Not going to be easy, that's for sure.
Well, a new future for Chelsea. It'd be interesting to see who represents them at the Premier League annual meeting next week, as the clubs all do gather in Northern England.
It's going to be a pretty key meeting for very many reasons. They're meeting at a Rudding Park Hotel, which just happens to be a client of the law firm run by the Premier League's interim chairman, Peter McCormick, interestingly. I think one of the most important things is going to be the finances and what they intend to do about providing money down the rest of the football league. The EFL, they want another £250 million. And I think there's some serious pressure rising on them to do that. Part of the discussion, I guess, will also be what happens to the League Cup, the Carabao Cup. England's the only country now which has one. France got rid of theirs a couple of years ago. UEFA doesn't like these League Cups. Expanded Champions League from 2024 is going to put that under pressure. So I think that will be all part of the mix next week.
Well, a busy one we'll try to keep across. But that about brings an end to things here in Paris from myself, Rob Harrison, Tarek Panja, and from Martin Ziegler back in England. As ever, if you've got any feedback, you can message us at Sport Unlocked on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But for now, enjoy the sport and days ahead. Goodbye.